to buy a Philips Hue light, for example, anyone can do that. You get it on Amazon, you screw it into your light and it can come on and off. It's not everyone, for a start, that wants to do that. But also, to optimize that product, do routines that wake you up in the morning, or beautiful colors or dimming curves and all that type of stuff. Yeah, it needs some expertise. And you either spend hours and hours and hours and it's your hobby and you do it, or you find someone to do it for you. And that, for me, is the big bit that's changing. We're seeing a lot more guys who are willing to take on these types of projects to become an on-ramp. Now, whether you call that electrician plus or custom installer or whatever else, that's the on-ramp for a lot of people who will be watching this podcast. Normal people like us with normal houses that want to get technology integrated that's going to make their lives better.
The power to tell a story is in us all. The power to change the way we feel, our understanding, change the rules, how we see ourselves, provoke, change history. Together, let's change the bigger picture. Change access. Put camera gear in more hands and keep the story going. Buy, sell, and trade used camera gear. MPB.
Hello and welcome to the AV Forum's Home AV podcast for Monday, the 21st of October. And on this edition, I'm joined by Neil Davidson from Surround Group. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Phil. How are you getting on?
Very well, thank you very much. We also have Dr. Julian Scott from Habitech. Hi, Jules.
Hi, Phil.
And Martin Dew is also joining us. Hi, Martin.
Hi.
Right, so this week, what are we talking about? We're talking about EI Live. Don't worry if you don't know what that is. We're going to explain exactly what that is and all the cool stuff that we had a look at when we were at that show, and three of us were at least there in person. So we'll tell you about some of the bits and pieces that was interesting there. And we're also going to cover some of the issues facing the custom home integration, smart integration industries, and how they get their services in front of you guys, the general public, and how you can use them. So that's all coming up. If you want to watch this version on YouTube, do it on the main channel. We used to send you to the AV Forums podcast channel. Not anymore. We're on the main channel now. So just head out to the AV Forums channel and you'll find the podcast there. And of course, if you enjoyed our content and podcast, then of course, please feel free to tell your friends and your peers and everybody else about how great the AV Forums podcast is and that you should come and listen and subscribe to it. Who are we? We're one of the largest AV and hi-fi communities on the internet. We've been around 20 years. I'm the editor. I'm Phil Hinton. I've been there 21 years. Help. My responsibility there is everything to do with the editorial. I'm also certified by ISF, THX, and PVA. So that's me. Jules, why don't you quickly introduce yourself?
Sure. I think I joined AV Forums as an enthusiast back in 2003, 2004. And then I became professional video calibrator in 2011 and was doing that until recently when I joined Habitech as their new cinema specialist.
Excellent. And Martin, tell us about yourself.
Yes, formerly of Lucasfilm THX in San Francisco and worked in the pro side of cinema with NEC Corporation with the digital cinema division, also in California. I'm now a freelance journalist and I am also PVA video calibrator certified, and I also offer PR services to various manufacturers.
Okay. Martin's just newly qualified as well with a PVA, yes. Just in his training recently. So good stuff. We won't test you in any way whatsoever during the course of this podcast. And also joining us is Neil Davidson. Neil, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm not PVA certified, Phil, so we need to get that one sorted out.
It's all the rage.
Yeah. I've been in this game for, well, it's 18 years now. I looked it up actually since our last podcast. So 18 years. Working with installers in the UK and across the world, doing fantastic projects for clients in their homes. So that's what we do.
Excellent. Good stuff. So that's your team today. That's the experience that we've got. Hopefully we're going to say something that's interesting and that helps you out. No promises though, but hopefully we will. So what are we talking about today? EI Live. I kept getting that wrong. It's one of these things that I just could not get right. Essential Install is a magazine for the install business, custom installation side of things. It's their live show. Free to enter for anybody that's in the trade. Go along and meet lots of people like Neil, distributors and companies with fantastic gadgets that they want to sell to the custom integrators, and which eventually will find their way to your home. Some of the stuff is available to you already through normal dealers and so on, but the essential install side is more about custom integration. So that's when you hire a company, tell them what they want, and they'll come and fit it all for you and make it look absolutely lovely and hide all your cables and get everything talking to each other the way they should be. An interesting show on the first time I've actually been to that particular show. I have done Cedia Expo in the past, both in Atlanta and when it used to run at the, I believe it was the Excel Centre it used to run at in the UK. So I've done that in the past, but this was the first time I've been to this show. So Neil, being the industry veteran that you are, and this is your side of the industry, why don't you tell us all about EI Live, why it's important and why it exists?
So EI Live is a trade show, Phil, and I'm sure lots of people get to go to trade shows and stuff like that. It's where companies like ours that sell business to business, and Jules also now is a business to business guy as well. We get the chance to show off the sort of products and the solutions that we offer to people in the trade. I'm sure that you can imagine, like most industries, it's not easy to keep up with all the latest news and developments and all the rest of the stuff. And it's a chance to show off and, yeah, promote, educate, do all of those good things to your customers all over a space of a couple of days. So that's the key purpose of the show. And it's really the main show that we've got for doing that in the UK these days.
It's not the only show in Europe, though, is it? There is a massive show in Amsterdam. Well, it used to be Amsterdam. I believe it's now Barcelona.
Barcelona, yeah. Yeah, so a massive show called ISE, Integrated Systems Europe. It started off, also about 18 years ago, is a little show in a shed in Belgium. And dear me, hasn't it grown? More than 50,000 people attend that show. If anyone's ever been in Amsterdam at the Rai, it had to move from the Rai because the Rai was too small. So the Rai is pretty vast and it was too small. So that gives you an idea of how many things are at that show. Pretty
plus
cool.
It was freezing, wasn't it, Neil? Freezing in Amsterdam at that time of year. But Barcelona's a welcome bit of sunshine in the middle of winter.
Absolutely.
I think it's also, they've announced it's larger this year. They're expanding it for 2025. So, yeah.
The EI also isn't just residential. It expands into sort of B2B communications, sort of from a very high level, I guess. But I guess the theme is all there of communicated AV and associated systems.
Well, at ISE, you will see some pretty amazing things because it does cover the complete spectrum. One of the biggest things last year, for example, was virtual production stages. That is pretty wild to see all of that stuff in real time when it's compositing over people walking around and stuff like that.
I was lucky to actually see one in Hollywood being used on a Sony lot. Amazing technology.
Well, imagine seeing like 10 of them just at a trade show, just knocking around. That's the sort of stuff you see at ISE. You end up quite jaded by the end of it all, I don't mind telling you. Oh, look, another 20-metre wide LED wall. Just keep walking.
Another one.
So, you know, that's what we're talking about today. So we're at the show, myself, Jules and Neil. Martin didn't go along, but Martin knows exactly what we're going to be talking about. So he won't be at any loose ends here because we've got lots to talk about. First thing we're going to talk about, Neil, is something that was on your stand. I'm not bigging you up because you're on the podcast. I think it was a genuinely interesting product. Was it a 240 or 235 to 1? Ratio.
21 by 9, so it's 2.37 lots of numbers after that.
That's so, CinemaScope screens on a TV. We've seen it in the past with Philips. There was a couple of other manufacturers tried on the professional side. I'm trying to remember when the Philips TV was. I think it was early 2000s, if I'm
quite correct. A while back. A while back now.
I think it was probably about 10 years ago, something like that.
Well, I think it was longer than that, actually. I think it was probably 2007. It was before 3D anyway. And 3D was 2009, 2010. So I think it was about 2007, 2008. It only hung around for 12 to 18 months. The issue back then was picture processing. How do you fit 16:9 material into a 21:9 screen? And even 21:9 content, because it was letterboxed in terms of sources, it was having to be stretched and resolution wasn't great and so on. So I think it was way ahead of its time back then. Great idea. Just the technology didn't quite fit and didn't quite make it work. So this was a new screen, certainly for me to see, Neil. It's more from the commercial side, but you were using it in a home theatre demonstration. Tell us a little bit about it.
So the screen is from a company called Planar. So in Europe, it's Layard Planar. Now, Planar have been around a long time, and as you said, it's a commercial display. Now, as a company, we've been involved with 21:9. I'm starting to say 21:9. I always used to hate that term, but yeah. Hey, it's starting to stick with me now. CinemaScope systems have always been a big part of the work that we've done with our projectors and all of that type of stuff. Of course, we're in a world now where flat panels are getting bigger and bigger. But in a cinema, I still think even a 100-inch flat panel, it just feels like a big telly.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. That's not meant to be bad or anything like that, mm-hmm. but that's what it feels like. It feels like a big telly.
Yeah.
And I saw these displays, 12 months ago. It's not a brand new concept. And if anyone does meeting rooms, Teams is totally promoting this whole 21:9 thing. But I saw it and I just thought to myself, you know what, that it feels cinematic in a way that a TV, the 16:9 aspect, doesn't feel.
Mm.
So we were very lucky to speak to those guys and move that forward, which was really a big opportunity for our company to work on such a cool product. But it's something, the size of it, so 105-inch diagonal, the actual dimensions of it, it's 2.4 metres wide by 1 metre tall. People will excuse my little bit of rounding there. It really feels like just the right size for a lot of systems. I don't know how else to explain it. It just ticked so many different boxes. Now, it's not an OLED, it's not a mini LED, but it does have other things. It's a very high quality panel. It does have local dimming. It does have an anti-glare surface on the front of it. So, it's a different concept. We're not trying to put it up against, the big guns. But the sheer cinematic quality of it, if we compare that with a projector, which is typically what we would be up against, it just offers something really different. And that's what we wanted to show people. And I think that's what we were able to show quite clearly when we set that up at the show.
And of course, 21:9 could be a ratio that comes back more mainstream as well, because obviously there is the movie industry, but also a huge industry that's pushing this development at the minute, and that's the games industry. Lots and lots and lots of gaming displays are now produced in 21:9 ratios, some even wider than that. It only takes a panel manufacturer to get on board and start to push this kind of ratio and screen size, and it could become... Well, it could come back again. We could see the likes of Philips launch. I'm not saying Philips will, but we could see something along those lines, but with a better processing. And this is the thing that has moved on, the picture processing and resolution.
You want to know something? Here's something, if you don't know, it will surprise you. Apple have announced that the Apple TV will be getting a 21:9 mode. That's literally on the Apple website. So we were having this discussion in the office. Why would Apple do that? We like to think our cool home cinemas are the driving factor. I suspect, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, it's kids at college or at home with 21:9 gaming monitors,
mm-hmm.
with an Apple TV slapped on the back of them.
Probably.
Well, thank you, kids at home with ultra-wide displays, for giving us exactly what we need for our cinematic
purposes. But I mean, like I was saying, it's probably not the movie industry, but you've got all that content that's already produced in that ratio from that side. And if gaming is going that way, and that's certainly the way I see it, more and more displays are 21:9 ratio or wider. Samsung in their TVs even do I'm pretty sure LG do it now as well this year, where they will do a 21:9 mode for gaming, where they'll rescale the 21:9 game. So you get that extra information from your PC gaming card and so on. So it could be coming very soon. What's your thoughts on it, Jules? I mean, we're going to come on.
I think it's great.
Projectors, so don't worry. We're not saying big screen is going to take over projection, but
no. I mean, it just gives people more options, doesn't it? And particularly in those sort of ambient conditions that you'll find in a living room or whatever. But no, I think it's great because I've always been a fan of scope ratios 2:3:5, 2:3:7, 2:4, whatever. Just the immersiveness of the width compared to 16:9 has always appealed to me. And obviously previously that's been the domain of projection and projection screens, but now we are getting panels like Neil's panel, and it's great. I think it's giving new life to it, and putting it back on the as a serious option for people. I think the problem with the Philips one going back that time was that the screens just were too small. See, 16:9 content is like a postage stamp, you know. Yeah. But now we're able to do, as Neil just said, 2.4 meters wide. That starts to really, you know, become very, very immersive and worthwhile. And your 16:9 content on that display is not going to be a postage stamp. So, yeah, I think it's great. So looking forward to seeing more of this stuff.
Yeah. And Neil, you were saying that the processing, it's quite neat in terms of it can tell what the ratio is of the source and then adjust accordingly and, you know, zoom out, zoom back in and add the black bars for 16:9 at the sides and so on. So we're getting there in terms of processing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of things that you need to try and make these things easier. The big thing in video processing, of course, over the last 18 months, 2 years, has been all of this new processing and detection. We'll try to keep it fair, Jules. So MadVR and Imagen both offer these detection modes, which has been really a big bonus because it's allowed the experience to be brought to more people. I'm sure you can imagine before when it was like, you know, if you see this, press that button on your remote control, a very complicated experience for people. And the fact that it's now basically all automated, that's the thing I think that really changes the experience. Mm-hmm. You know, no one wants black bars.
People really don't understand aspect ratios, do they?
No.
And I think the nice thing with a 21:9 monitor is you are keeping that constant image height, and that's what CinemaScope is all about. You keep the height the same, and then you have the immersion extended onto the sides.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, Phil, just to pick up there as well. One of the things that might not be clear is that a lot of the native 2.37 models, so the flat panels and certain projectors and stuff like that, are actually a 5K resolution. So they're a 5120 by 2160. So what you actually have is it scales up. It never scales down. You never lose any content. It's only getting scaled up. So that's a really important point as well that was not possible before. And definitely wasn't possible when we were talking, you know, HD resolutions.
Yeah. Martin, I've only got your thoughts on this.
I absolutely adore widescreen images. I think it's always interesting that cinema has informed everywhere that TV has gone, whether it's 16:9, which is effectively a home version of 1.85:1, which is the classic aspect ratio for most movies. And of course, these widescreen monitors, 21:9, derives straight from 2.35:1, which is the aspect ratio of anamorphic CinemaScope in the movies. I think it's nice that we keep these conventions going, and long may it continue. But the key here is keeping the image height constant, like I was saying, because that's what gives you that sense of immersion.
Yeah, the only fly in the ointment is the IMAX stuff, though.
Well, I'm just going to come on to Christopher Nolan. Yeah, somebody needs to tie his hands behind his back and stop jumping from IMAX to scope and back again, because, that's a conversation for another day, I feel. But, okay, so I think we're unanimous here. 2:3:5:1 TVs or 21:9 TVs, we're all in favour. Bring it on. And, of course, this leads us on to future technology as well. I'm saying future technology. It's available if you've got a few hundred grand to drop, which is micro LED, panel-based, modular-based. You can do any ratio you like. You could have your whole living room wall as a TV. I mean, these are things that do exist and will become more and more readily available as the technology gets better and so on. And it gets better and better every year. Every time I go to CES, there's new developments in micro LED, there's new screen sizes, the yields are getting better. They just need to get that scale of production to get the pricing down, because you're still talking at least tens of thousands for the entry point with those types of screens. So we'll keep a watch on that technology, because that could be the dream when it comes to TVs. Basically, you get the best of OLED, the best of LCD, and any ratio you like, basically. So that was screen TVs, and it was only really the TVs that I saw there. Obviously, there are distributors like AWE who cover LG and Hisense and all those brands that we're very familiar with. But it was more the tech that we don't get to see on a regular basis that I was interested in while I was at the show. Let's move on to you, Jules, with your Happy Tech hat on. You distribute JVC projectors, four new models, all of them laser powered now. Mm-hmm. Very impressive. We saw a demonstration of the 700, NZ700. Against the NZ900, I've got to say the flagship looked absolutely stunning. Absolutely. I haven't seen an image like that. I don't think I've ever seen a projected image like that, with that kind of depth and realism and so on. So tell us a little bit about the new projectors and what we saw there at the show, because you were responsible for some of the demos there and certainly calibrating the 900.
Yeah. You saw more of the show generally than I did. I bumped into Neil briefly, and that was probably, that's the only time I got outside the JVC tent. So, as usual, Phil, I'm stuck in a dark room with no light. That's what life is to me. A bit like being in Scotland, I suppose. But I know it's a dangerous thing to say with you guys on. We were... privileged to have the new NZ700 in that JVC booth alongside the NZ900. And I haven't seen the 500 yet. I obviously know what the specifications are for it. And we had the NZ800 back in our demo room at Habitech 2. So I've seen these new ones in the flesh, calibrated the 900, as you said at the show, calibrated the 800. Really liking the improvements they've made this year. It's not revolution, but JVC keep quietly just every year, whether through firmware updates or through, as it were, with these new models, just raising that bar a little bit further. The NZ900 has 150,000:1 native contrast. So obviously your room comes into play and can affect all of that, but optimally it gives you this incredible dynamic range. What was interesting to me, Phil, was how well the NZ700 stood up to it. And they have obviously reduced the size of those new ones. They're 35% smaller in terms of their size, which I think is appealing to many people, because the JVCs are big beasties, and they're very heavy, 24 kilos, I think, for the NZ900. Yeah. And the new ones are around 14. The NZ700 really... didn't look shabby compared to the NZ900.
I was really surprised, I've got to say. Yeah. They were, when you consider the price differential there, which I believe is it?
Well, it's, I think it's, yeah. It's 9,500 retail for the NZ700 and around 26 for the NZ900.
So you're talking nearly 16 grand worth of difference. There wasn't a 16 grand worth of difference on the screen when you look at the difference between them.
Absolutely, yeah. It was 80,000:1 native contrast for the NZ700, and it's 40,000 for the NZ500. They have changed the lenses this year, so it's been all glass on all JVC products in the past. Now they have redesigned the lens, so there is a resin element, but in the NZ500 and 700. But I put up the NZ7, I had it in my house, and I put it up against my NZ8, which is that same all glass lens that the new 800 and 900 has, and I couldn't really tell much difference between the two, to be honest, scrutinizing the thing. So they've done a really good job, because there's always a potential when you actually, you know, when you go from all glass to adding a sort of a resin element, that you're going to damage the way it kind of can sort of put 4K on the resolution of it. And I didn't see any of that. It's been a really well-designed lens. It should do very well. I think it's offering obviously, other companies like Sony and Epson have got brand new projectors out. I haven't seen those, but I believe that they're also really good.
Yes, they are. I had the chance to look at both the Sonys and the Epsons. The Epson blew me away in terms of, wow, that for what you're actually paying there, the technology you're getting on board. But Epson always do this. They always knock it out of the park. And they've been doing laser for a little while now as well. Yeah. So they've gotten very, very good at what they're doing with it.
And brightness ratings on those new Epsons. Yeah,
they were playing a scene I'm familiar with from Top Gun Maverick, and I thought it was very, very, very good. Very good. Mm. Sony, you know, they're consistent in their performance. I couldn't see the step up. That's the one thing I will say. You know, I know where the step up is in the JVC range from the 700 to the 900. You're talking, most of that cost is the glass. And you see that on screen, you know, the depth, the precision of the image and so on. There is the difference here. The only jump up on the Sony range that I believe is the brightness. Everything else remains the same. So to me, I wasn't quite sure what the sell-up was for the Projector 9, so the Bravia Projector 9. Bravia Projector 8 looks like the solid does-everything unit, whereas the 9 is that little bit brighter. But that was the only difference I could see. And speaking to the reps and speaking to Adam from Sony Professional as well, that was the big difference here. So I guess it's media room versus home cinema, basically, if you need that brightness or not, or so on. But yeah, I saw the other two, very, very good. Those two companies do make excellent projectors as well. That was the projection side. And JVC, as always, as we expect from JVC. What I did take away as well, Jules, and I don't know if you managed to see the mock-up on the stand as well, Neil, is the new form factor. We're heading back to where it used to be, and I used to like the old form factor from the, I think it was the HD 700, 750 range, where the lens was slightly offset to the right.
Offset,
and it was a little case, and it was a much neater unit, whereas we've gone from that to these big, you know, projectors where you need a lot of airflow for the laser components and all the rest of it, and it kind of outsized a little bit. I know one of the big complaints has been projector lifts, which is a big thing in the custom world. You put a projector on a lift, getting them to actually fit, which I understand is why JVC have kind of gone back with and looked at the chassis again, Jules.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of good feedback from integrators on that point with the size and the weight of the units. More flexibility in terms of placement. They've changed also the intakes as well. So the air intakes are slightly different. I think the feedback that we were getting on that booth was very, very positive about the size. Certainly makes it a lot easier to find place for it in your room. And also the other good thing is that the mounting holes are the same as the previous one. So you can use the same if you're swapping over, let's say from an MP5, the old lamp-based one, to an NZ500 or 700, or any of that line, it shares the same mounting. So you don't have to buy a new ceiling mount.
I know something.
And the NZ500 is quite a bit more compact, isn't it, than the others?
Well, the 700 is the same size, Martin. It shares the same new chassis. The difference is then you get to the 800 and the 900, and they're the bigger units. Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody who I know designs and builds the projector mounts, Neil, this must be one of the big bugbears when, you know, a projector manufacturer comes out with one that everybody's going mad for, and then it's, well, hang on a minute, how are we going to fit this in a projector lift or mount or so on?
We have very big ones, Phil, so it's okay for us. It's interesting. So I think you touched on it already. What would we say, lads? Generation 3 maybe of the laser systems now? We kind of had the first ones where it was just amazing to see a laser, and then we had the second generation where there was no external chillers or anything like that. It was all built in. And now we're moving on to this third generation where they're starting to shrink them down. I mean, like the same thing happened with normal projectors, or should we say lamp-based projectors. I'm laughing off camera here as a gigantic DCI projector.
The other thing, Neil, is you know, it's shrinking size, but also fan noise is certainly relevant, because a lot of these are not going to be in hush boxes. You're talking in Z500, 700s, or whatever, you know, whatever the Sony and Epson range is. They're going to be in AV forums, you know, members' rooms without that. So keeping it, having the brightness, but also keeping that acoustic floor low is really important. And certainly I can speak for the JVC ranges that they are quieter than before. They've got more gradations in the laser now, so you can increase your light output without ruining that acoustic floor.
So actually, that's a really interesting point. So I promise this wasn't a setup between me and Jules beforehand also. So only this week I invested many of my my pennies in a wonderful new tool called an acoustic camera, which allows you to literally create like a heat map type view of sound. Pretty amazing piece of tech, specifically for measuring noise from projectors and also in building applications and stuff like that as well. Now, it's very, very interesting, because what you find, and this is something that you see on the forums, one guy will put the projector up and go, can't hear it. And the next guy will put the same projector up and go, man, that thing is reverberating right in my ears. And what we find is that the actual fan size is a very important part of the projector design, because in the projector, the cooling is all about moving volumes of air, right? It's just about how much air you can move through the thing. A larger fan runs slower for the same volume of air going through it. Now, a fan is a constant rotating device, so therefore it has quite a peaked sound profile. If you measure that, it's not broadband like white noise would be. It's really at whatever speed the fan is rotating at. So a larger fan means a lower frequency. So even sometimes when the noise is actually measures louder due to the quirks of our hearing, but also just the sheer more difficult to hear those low-level sounds, it becomes less irritating, in fact, less noticeable. So that's a pretty big factor. The other thing, though, that is very, very interesting is people will be familiar, there's lots of different ways that you can build the chassis of a projector. You can do it with plastic and shells, or you can do it with metal and all of those types of things. It's very, very interesting that you get different re-emitting surfaces on the projector bodies themselves. And what we've actually found is that damping certain points can actually make a huge difference to the noise level. But also, like a cunningly placed little bit of a baffle can also make a huge difference to the noise level. Hence why I've spent all this money on an acoustic camera, so that we can really picture what's happening with the sound when it comes off the devices. So indeed, people can enjoy these as quiet as possible without having necessarily to go to the extent of, you know, hush box is a big thing. By definition, it has to fit around the projector. And it's quite expensive to make those things. So if we can simplify that.
Sounds like a
that,
cool thing.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Okay. We need to wrap up on the EI Live show and all the nice tech that we saw there. But before we do, anything else that kind of jumped out? Now, I know you had the MAG Theatron speaker system. There is a video about that from Neil's stand. Again, I got the demonstration of Ready Player One, a scene I know only too well. Old demo scene that I used to use. It was playing both days I was there, Neil, on a regular basis. You obviously had quite a few people in front of the system. So just quickly explain what it is, where it's positioned in the market, and why people should maybe take notice.
So MAG Theatron is actually a Ukrainian company. So they still have a huge manufacturing facility just south of Kiev, which is always interesting when you hear that exists there. They are a leading company in commercial cinema and pro audio, in fact. And Theatron has arranged that they have created really specifically to optimize their technology for home applications. And the reason that was interesting for us is that we have been looking to bring something at quite a good value price point that's still very high performance, but also it sounds like real cinema. We did a project, we've spoken about this separately. We did a project that was a small commercial type cinema, like a hotel cinema. And it was amazing how the configuration of that was quite a different, don't know how else to explain it, guys. You've got to feel it. It was cinematic, not hi-fi. And we really wanted to find a company that could offer us that without really sacrificing a lot of quality. And the guys at MAG perfectly fitted the bill. And this whole world of waveforming and stuff, as we've spoken about before, they offer a lot of powerful subwoofer options. We've had quite a lot of calls from people very interested, apparently, in rebuilding their houses and subwoofers. Seems to be a thing these days. So God bless those people for their devotion to bass. But that's been something that we've been very interested in adding to our portfolio. You know, other companies have done very, very well by talking about that, and we wanted to be part of that as well. So that was our big thing that we wanted to show off to people at the show. Yeah. Good value, high performance, real cinema, lots of bass.
Excellent. Anything else from you, Jules? Anything that you thought stood out or needs mentioning?
Honestly, I was in that JVC booth for 3 days. Phil. I saw nothing outside of Neil, you know, and that was on the way to go and get a coffee. I think that was it. That's, you know, you saw more of it than I did.
It was interesting. Not a huge show. You know, we were talking about ISE. If you want huge, that's probably the show to go and see. But if you are in the business in any way, business to business, or you sell to consumers or whatever, and you want to see what's new, what's being introduced into homes and being used on a regular basis, that's definitely the show to pop along to. There's lots of products here on shelves that I had no idea what the product did, because it's not my game, not what I do. But just stopping and speaking and talking to a few people there and finding out what they do in the industry and so on. It's really quite interesting stuff. So if you get the chance, it's in Farnborough, go along. It's free entry. As long as you're in the trade in some way, you can pop along there and have a look. But anyway, we need to wrap up on that one. You're watching and listening to the AV Forums Home AV podcast. We're going to move on now. We're going to talk about, how do you get this technology in your home? And do you actually know what this technology does? And when we're talking about home integration, we're talking about custom installation, we're talking about building a home theatre or a media room or whatever, how would you find the person that's going to do this for you and put this in? Lots of us think that we have the skills, been in the game a long time and been, you know, I review kit on a regular basis, but there's parts of this system building that I don't understand, and I guess you guys don't understand either, or maybe you want to learn a little bit more of it, or maybe you just want somebody to come in and take care of it for you, hide the wires in the wall, make things look neat, and everything always works. So, Jules, how does this industry that you are all part of get in front of our audience here at AV Forums and the wider audience where people are buying Ring doorbells and these kinds of products quite cheaply off the shelf, but they can't make it all talk to each other, can't make it do what the potential there suggests it can be done with it?
Well, I mean, in terms of AV Forums, obviously you've got guys like Neil who have been doing this for a long time, who are, you know, sponsors, and, you know, their services are available. Neil will distribute to integrators he's in contact with who are building these rooms for people. Obviously, we have a lot of capable DIYers on AV Forums. I'm not one of them. Don't ask me to pick up a screwdriver. I'm just hopeless at anything like that. So for me personally, I would need one of these firms to come in and do it for me. And how would I find one? Well, I'd probably just Google custom installer in my area or something like that and see who's around. There's the thing with our industry is that there is no We have Cedia as a sort of an overarching body, but it's not, you know, that that helps, but that you anybody can call themselves a custom installer tomorrow. You can get, you know, electricians or builders or whatever. Doesn't necessarily mean that they can have really particular experience in building cinema rooms. It's a very specific skill, as opposed to just, you know, hanging a TV on a wall, hanging some speakers, and running some speaker wire through some sort of ducting or whatever. So it can be a little bit of a tricky one, a minefield. You might want to make sure that they, as I say, they're CDA registered to start off with. That's some indicator that they're interested in training, that they're interested in sort of becoming part of a wider body, an industry body. Obviously, CDA, you've had Steve on, Steve Carter on before, Phil, many times, talked about the things that CDA is doing with things like RP22, etc. So if you're a CDA member, you're probably being sort of, you're hooked into that kind of thing in terms of just the concept, you know, doing good professional work for people. So that's probably a good place to start looking, is somebody CDA certified, registered. So that's how I would do it, fellas. And also, I was going to say, advertising on AV forums, there are lots of integrators doing that, and magazines are becoming a thing of the past, aren't they?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, so unfortunately, the physical magazine was where a lot of integrators advertised their services, but that's obviously now gone. So I think you know you're going to have to Google, and you're going to have to obviously you can't beat word of mouth. If anybody's, I'm sure lots of AV forums users have had rooms built by custom installer, and you want to ask them what their experience is, no doubt they'll have a thread somewhere, and they're detailing the build as well.
Neil, is the problem companies like yours and then companies like Habitech that Jules works for and so on?
Ours is definitely the problem.
but this is what I'm trying to get to. Is it the problem that B2B is great, fantastic, you all know each other, you all talk to each other, you all sell to each other, and you all show off to each other and so on at these trade shows and all the rest of it? But is there then this gap between what you guys are doing and the general public, and how do you get that to cross over?
So this is something that really people might be surprised, but really matters to me. So my company, people should understand, we set up always from day one to be at the high end of the marketplace, you know, and you've got to have a particular skill set to do that, and knowledge of very weird things that not a general installer needs to know about. And when we started, so I said at the start of this, is 18 years for me. If you wanted to have control in your house or your lights to be automated, man, that was a pretty cool thing to have in those days. And it was expensive. There's no getting around it. Therefore, by definition, it was the preserve of the wealthy and high-end individuals. Now, what has changed dramatically, in my opinion, is products that are designed for consumers have become so much better, so much better. I mentioned it in my other video, and I always mention it. So if you take Philips Hue lights, for example, my entire house is full of Philips Hue lights. I'm sure many of the people viewing this, almost everyone I know has Philips Hue lights. Okay. It's easy in the custom install world to poo-poo a Philips Hue light, £50 light bulb, you know. If you actually look at the functionality that provides, it's almost unbelievable compared to pretty much anything else that's in the marketplace. Now, that actually goes through a great deal of stuff that is available now. You've mentioned Ring Security. There's an amazing brand called Ajax for security. We know all about these things for monitoring your leak detection, or monitoring your power, or any of these types of things. There's a huge number of things. Wi-Fi and networking at home, that's a critical thing these days for people, you know. If I had to offer my kids the choice of water or internet, I know which one would be getting switched off when they can't drink it. I can tell you that, the one that they would keep. It's absolutely critical to get these infrastructure things right. And what we've seen very, very clearly is that in a lot of ways, custom installation has followed the world of electricians, for example. So, you know, in the old days, an electrician perhaps would come in and he would discuss some products and he would sell them and he would make some money on both of those items. Well, it doesn't really work that way anymore. If you want to buy a socket, well, it costs the electrician the same price as it costs you to buy that socket. A lot of the time he'll just say, you buy it, I'll fit it. Happy days. And we're actually seeing now that a lot of guys involved in installation are actually happy to work in that way. It's almost a different industry. And I think it's one that is very, very important for everyone in our business, because you hit the nail on the head. To buy a Philips Hue light, for example, anyone can do that. You get it on Amazon, you screw it into your light and it can come on and off. It's not everyone, for a start, that wants to do that. But also to optimize that product, do routines that wake you up in the morning, or beautiful colors or dimming curves and all that type of stuff. Yeah, it needs some expertise. It needs some expertise. And you either spend hours and hours and hours and it's your hobby and you do it, or you find someone to do it for you. And that, for me, is the big bit that's changing. We're seeing a lot more guys who are willing to take on these types of projects to become an on-ramp. Now, whether you call that Electrician Plus or Custom Install or whatever else, that's the on-ramp for a lot of people who will be watching this podcast. Normal people like us with normal houses that want to get technology integrated that's going to make their lives better. And for me, that's the bit that people do first, because it makes your life better. And then they do the entertainment on top of that. And like the entertainment, you know, one TV is as a functional thing, much the same as another TV. It's what level of quality do you want to go for, and all of those types of discussions that we enjoy. But people shouldn't be afraid. There are lots of people now who are very interested and good at helping. Even that very basic seeming, how do I get good network throughout my house? How do I get these lights to work properly? All the way up to very, very high-end, sophisticated, integrated homes. Jules already said that Cydia is probably, for all good or bad reasons, as people might want to argue, that's probably your best port of call. But also Google will be full of local guys now who can do this type of stuff for you.
And of course, like we said before, AV Forums, we've got a large forum area where we talk about home cinema DIY or professional home cinema installations. We used to have a great magazine. It broke my heart. I haven't read it for a long time, but it broke my heart to hear that Home Cinema Choice is finished. I bought that from issue one. I remember it clear as day. It had Judge Dredd, hand-drawn Judge Dredd on the cover. It was almost a Bible for a lot of us in terms of getting into this hobby. I know Steve May very well, who was the editor back then. I meet Steve on a regular basis going backwards and forwards. I know Mark Craven, who's the editor there as well, for the last few years. Great guys. And they brought a fantastic magazine. And one of the big areas of the magazine I thought worked incredibly well was the reader systems and the professional systems, and mixing those two together and having one of each in each edition. And it kind of gave you that this is the inspiration or the aspirational product, and this is what somebody's gone out and spent their hard end on and learnt this or learnt that or brought somebody in to help them. And so we're going to miss that magazine. I think there was definitely room for the printed press as well as online.
There definitely is, because it also gives another layer of validation, I think, sometimes print media over web. But of course, although we're a web operation here. But I also feel with printed media and magazines that it's also easier to prioritize the actual page layout and understand kind of what the headline is. I think on the web, it's more difficult to achieve that prioritization, certainly in the eye of the reader.
Yeah, no, there definitely was space for both print and online. Unfortunately, people are just not buying print anymore, and that's the way the cookie is crumbling, unfortunately. So went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but there was a reason, because, you know, Mark and Steve did a great thing with that magazine, and that was having pro installs, but also consumer installs and you know, enthusiast systems and that kind of thing. And it gave us all a bit of inspiration and so on. And I think that will be sadly lacking. But there is an area on AV Forums where we cover all that. You can go and look at people's projects. You can go and look at some of the work that Neil and others in the industry do at the very high end as well. There's a few systems well documented there and photographed and so on. So yeah, go over and check out that area of AV forums. Martin, where do you stand with this? I mean, obviously, day-to-day, we deal with a lot of companies like Habitech and Neil's Surround Group and so on, but also, you know, our audience is the end consumers. What do we do as journalists, as people who make content for these people? How do we integrate that and get the message across and help people on their journey?
Well, I mean, hopefully through reviews of audio equipment, but also doing features, I think it's important that we sort of explain through how-tos, how to achieve things either in the home. If you feel it's something that is out of reach, I mean, going back to what Jules said, I think the quality of the integrator that you hire is extremely important because, and of course, Neil was talking about lighting systems. You may find that some of these integrators, service providers, are very good at the automated lighting and curtains and security, but not very good at home cinema. And I even found while I was doing ad hoc tech support for Miller and Kreisel, who I was contracting to, I was getting calls from some of your dealers, Jules, with questions that slightly shocked me, even after they had completed trainings in various brands' wares. How little it seemed they knew about the setup of the cinemas they were working on. So it doesn't apply to everyone, of course, but like you said, I think getting good word of mouth is important.
Yeah. So I guess wrapping up on this side of things, Neil, someone in the industry who owns a company, what is it that you think is good and what do you think needs to change in terms of getting the message out there and what you guys do as a business and how you can bring people in and get them the advice and the product they need?
Well, I think the good is that, you know, we are lucky enough, my own experience is that we are lucky enough to work in very exclusive projects, right? That's what we do. Can't pretend it's not cool. You go on a yacht or one of these mega estates or something like that. It's, you know, it's cool. But at the same time, I think that's the bad bit of it because sharing that, you know, it's all well and good for me to glibly say, well, that was a £500,000 home cinema. It's not exactly relevant to your everyday consumer other than, you know, let's have a look at that. That might be cool. I think that that's one of the biggest opportunities, you know. What's the biggest market for home cinemas in the UK? I suspect it's probably around £10,000, you know, with a nice soundbar and a nice TV like what we've spoken about previously, guys. And it's about letting people know, in my opinion, very much that there are options for people at much, much more budget price points compared to the crazy high-end stuff, you know, that we get involved with. I really think that that's one of the biggest opportunities. And I think that AV Forums is particularly well placed to do that because of the historical user base that's there. You know, there's a lot of us, you know, we're all young boys when we started off and we've all, you know, we've all gone through this whole curve.
You've hardly aged, Phil.
Thanks, Jules. Checks in the post.
Yeah. So we've all gone through this curve together. And I think that that gives you a unique voice, perhaps. That you can use when you're speaking with people who would be interested in this thing. I mean, you've mentioned Home Cinema Choice, etc. There is clearly opportunity now for AV Forums as we're doing at this minute in time to play a good part in that.
Jules, what do you think? What's the good? What's the bad? What can we improve on in terms of this industry?
Wow. I mean, it'd be lovely to have some form of corgi registration, wouldn't it? But you know, where you pick the phone up, you speak to an integrator and you can be assured that you're going to get a great room. And Cedia works in that area, but it's entirely, you can join or you cannot join. It's up to you. It'd be nice to have the sort of the, you know, a general base, for everybody's, for the quality of people's, you know, integrations. To Neil's point about, you know, the average, price of the room, you know, £10,000 obviously is a lot of money for some people, and the £500,000 home cinema is the cost of a lot of people's homes, in total, or twice the cost of their home, depending on where they live. So we spent, our industry spent a huge range of incomes. And at the moment, what we're finding, obviously, the lower end of the market, when we say the lower, the entry level, the mid level, is being squeezed by the economy. Those big rooms still sell. But the, you know, the, we're finding some of those smaller rooms are, some of the integrators there are sort of struggling a bit. We all had a massive boom after COVID. You know, hopefully the economy can pick up, and you know, those rooms can be kind of affordable to people again. Whether it's a £10,000 or whatever, £30,000 room. It's nice at Habitat. We actually have 6 demo rooms, ranging from the sort of the £500,000 down to one room which is £10,000, and you can get a good experience in all of those as well. So. In terms of AV Forums users, there's going to be loads of great DIYers, but there is something out there at every level for somebody, whatever your wallet is. There are integrators there who will help people like me who are useless at DIY and give you a great great professional room at the end of it. So I think, yeah, as Neil also said, AV Forums, in the demise of certain print media, can be a really important place to find these. And already the forums are sponsored and have some good integrators involved with AV Forums already.
Yeah. Martin?
Yes, I agree with everything Jules says there. Yes, I think AV Forums will be one of those resources moving forward, most definitely. And it's interesting when you look back actually to the 90s, early 90s, when home cinema was just starting, if you like, and people thought of it as just, I mean, everybody had their stereo system on their sideboard, for example, in their homes. And that was a chance of using 5 speakers and possibly a subwoofer. And the idea was that you would just make do at home and convert your living room or whatever it may be. And I think that was the trigger that caused, or certainly lent to, integration or home integration to become a thing and became a purpose for dealers to then offer that value add service on top. Because obviously for most people, wires around the room have to be hidden, and in most cases are, but how do you deal with it? And certainly custom integration is the way to deal with that, and that's why it's a big business now. But just make sure that we keep that quality high in cinema. It'd be lovely to have some kind of certification program as well, like Jules says. I mean, the CEDIA, of course, I always thought the THX trained certification badge was a good one as well, and it would be nice to have some kind of level marker or something to let the consumer know that they have that quality to install to whichever level.
Excellent. Well, that's the subject covered for this month. Before we go, we've got some competitions and supporters to talk about, and Jules is going to do the honours here. So on you go, Jules.
Okay. So a new competition is that you can win a Hisense 65-inch U7N a mini LED TV, and these are tongue twisters, aren't they? AX3120G soundbar, a perfect duo paired for a cinematic experience in your home, worth £1,298. And you can also win £500 to spend with MPB, the largest global platform to buy, sell, and trade and use photo and video gear. Closing date 11:59 PM, Thursday, 24th of October.
Excellent. Sony's definitely onto something when they say, we're just going to call our products Bravia and then a number, because it makes it a lot easier than the tongue twisters. And we always said you should name your subwoofer the Bass Bastard or something like that. And then just
there's probably been a committee that decided, we're going to call this the AX3120G.
But they are fantastic prizes.
Absolutely.
We're just poking fun at some of the model names here. That Hisense TV is a cracker. I have reviewed that already this year. It's a very, very good TV. And the soundbar to go with it. And of course, you've got £500 by MPB. Any previous winners?
Yeah. We had JJ Bomber won a single Oslo home cinema seating, black, worth £1,399.99. And Red Devil 69 won £500 to spend with MPB.
Excellent. Well done to you, previous winners. New patrons?
Yep. Vuitton and Pulp FXN.
And has anybody bought us a coffee? Because I'm a bit thirsty.
We have Repo Man 666 bought us a coffee.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for all your support, guys. It really is appreciated. And thank you to Neil, Martin and Jules. Thank you very much, guys. It is appreciated. Our next episode is the Movies, TV Show and Disc podcast. It's all merging all into one podcast going forward, Kaz and the team. And that's due on Monday, the 28th of October. So make sure you tune in for that. That's live from 7 p.m. audio only, and also on the AV Forums podcast channel. AV Forums YouTube channel. I'm going to have to get used to saying that. The podcast channel, we're not putting them up there anymore. Main channel, that's where you'll find all the podcast videos. And you'll find the full-length audio-only versions on your favourite podcast provider. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching and listening. And we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.